you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
A good Saturday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and coming up after the headlines, King Tut, the boy king of ancient Egypt, has been known around the world since his treasure-filled tomb was discovered a century ago. We'll head to downtown LA to meet the creator of a new immersive experience exploring Tut's life, tombs, and treasures. And then in our latest installment of How to LA, we'll head over to Grub in Glendale. I'm already feeling hungry. The LA County District Attorney's Office has filed assault charges against a sheriff's deputy involved in last year's fatal shooting of David Ordaz Jr. KPCC's Frank Stoltz reports.
Deputy Ramin Pineda was one of four deputies who responded to a call from Ordaz's sister, who said her brother had a knife and was suicidal. Video shows Ordaz holding a knife outside the family's East LA home. After deputies fire beanbags at him, he stumbles and begins to run up the sidewalk. That's when they open fire. But the DA says Pineda continued to shoot after Ordaz had fallen to the ground and dropped the knife. Ordaz's parents and four siblings witnessed the killing. Hilda Pedroza is his older sister.
We're not the same anymore. It's hard to be happy with all this trauma that we have now. PTSD, depression, anxiety.
She says they wish the DA had filed charges against all four deputies, but is happy he is prosecuting at least one of them. I'm Frank Stoltz.
Despite this week's storm, we are still in a drought, and the climate crisis is making snow in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, which is LA's primary source of water, less reliable. Here's Mark Pastrella, director of LA County Public Works.
The model for LA County says that we're going to see the same amount of water, but we're going to see it in less frequently with a higher intensity, which is kind of scary if you think about it, because that means our water is going to come sort of all at once.
He says capturing stormwater and storing it for later at a local level is essential for future water security. Local officials in Southern California are still processing ballots they received through Election Day, and mail-in ballots will continue to arrive through Tuesday. KPCC's LEU explains what you should know about the vote total so far.
In LA County, election officials have counted more than 1.5 million votes. That's 27% of registered voters. But there are still some 800,000 ballots estimated left to count that were received through Election Day. Plus, the registrar's office will continue to receive mail-in ballots through next Tuesday. In the 2018 midterm elections, turnout in LA County was nearly 60%. LA County is scheduled to release its next results update tomorrow. The updates are being closely watched as there are a number of tight races, including for LA Mayor. I'm LEU.
And in Orange County, the current tallies represent about 40% of registered voters. Hopefully, we'll get a new count later today. The Caltech Seismolab is celebrating more than 100 years. The lab is responsible for transforming earthquake research, advancing instrumentation and public education. Seismologist Lucy Jones from the Dr. Lucy Jones Center for Science and Society says part of their job is to create calm amidst fear.
And when we give it a name and we give it a number and we give it a fault, we make it seem understandable.
You can join the celebration on the Caltech campus today from 11 to 1. There will be an earthquake preparedness fair, and experts are going to explore the science behind earthquakes in major films. Well, dog parks are common across much of LA County. One community is finally getting their doggy green space. The Ross Snyder Dog Park opens today in South LA. Angelina Valencia Dumero is with Councilmember Curran Price's office.
This is something that the community has been wanting for years. We just don't happen to have the land, the funding for it, and now it's time to really put our furry little friends front and center.
She says the park will promote a healthier lifestyle for dog owners and their pets.
Dogs are going to be able to go and exercise and play in a safe and social environment. It's going to give our pet lovers and our residents a place where they can go, they can relax, and they can build community.
Free microchips, doggy vaccines, and vouchers for spay and neutering will be offered at today's opening ceremony going till 11 a.m. And attention, snow bunnies. Today is opening day in Big Bear. The lifts at Big Bear and Snow Mountains are running. They just actually started running a few moments ago. Mountain High and Wrightwood also open today. Temps hitting about 45 degrees at both resorts. The effects of climate change can be seen and felt in different ways in our area, including our most iconic feature, the Southern California coast. A new research hub based out of UC San Diego is devoted to studying the impacts of climate change. For more, we're joined by the hub's director, coastal oceanographer Mark Merrifield. Mark, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
The California Hub is focused on the warming climate and the coast. Before we get into what that actually means for the ocean potentially, can you just recap for us what kind of warming trends is in the forecast for Southern California and how much warmer it's going to get along the coast?
Well, the predictions for Southern California are very much similar to the global projections in that we expect to see many more heat waves, many more just hot days in general. It's likely that this will be an effect not only seen on land, but also in the ocean, where ocean temperatures are expected to rise.
And what kind of changes are you going to be looking for in the ocean as we adapt to these rising temperatures?
Well, for those of us living in Southern California, we are very appreciative of the neighboring ocean because it's what makes it such a pleasant Mediterranean climate. And that ocean influence penetrates inland a certain distance until it transitions into the more arid desert and mountainous regions to the east. And the question, I guess, for us, one fundamental question is how is that going to change in the future? So as both the ocean and atmosphere are warming, to what extent can we count on that moderating ocean influence and how will it affect different communities at different locations away from the coast? So in particular, during the summer, Southern California land temperatures are really moderated not only by the ocean breeze coming inland, but also by low clouds. We all know that June gloom is a phenomenon out here where we get a lot of hazy, cool days. And so what's the future for marine low clouds and how will that play through the Southern California region where there's a huge difference if you're right at the coast as opposed to, let's say, 10 miles inland where those cloud effects are less beneficial.
And it seems as though the hub's approach is quite interdisciplinary. So can you tell us what kinds of scientists you're bringing together and why it is important to have experts from different fields together on the project?
Okay, well, the physical science part of it is a big part as just sort of describing the atmosphere, land, ocean connections that lead to extreme heat events. Then there's also the human aspect. There's a lot of variation in the exposure to and vulnerability to heat as you move through our communities. Some areas are naturally hotter, but also some areas are hotter because of land use practices. It leads to variability in heat impacts on human health and just the ability to stay cool during the day. Some people have more access to strategies to stay cool, such as air conditioning, and some don't. There's also, as part of this project, we're trying to think about how urban greening efforts can be incorporated and to what extent will those be impacted by a changing climate as well? To what extent will these urban greening efforts be effective and sustainable with a limited water supply?
And your team is also planning on making recommendations on what to do with the information you gather. What kind of guidance could potentially come from your team?
There may be a bit of a early warning aspect to this, just sort of thinking maybe a season in advance. Are we expecting a hotter than usual summer? What areas of the community might be most vulnerable? What's happening with the ocean and how is the ocean atmosphere land connection likely to play out through a particular season? So those sorts of early warning or predictive skill would be one aspect of the project. The other is to look at just in detail this relative to that natural forcing, what are the exact human impacts and how do they play out across different socioeconomic factors, different built environment? And in doing so, how does that translate into possible adaptation strategies that take full advantage of of a better predictability, I guess, of where heat impacts are likely to be most extreme.
That's UC San Diego coastal oceanographer Mark Merrifield talking about the new Southern California research hub studying the coastal impacts of climate change. Mark, thanks for being with us and sharing your work.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back after this short break.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin. You are about to meet the creator of LA's newest immersive experience, which opened last week on the 100th anniversary of the discovery of King Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt's Valley of the Kings. Morning Edition host Suzanne Watley takes you downtown to Magic Box LA, where visitors wind through a series of galleries displaying National Geographic photos of the Boy King's treasure-filled tomb and wonders within. They also take an imaginative journey with the pharaoh through the afterworld.
My name is Mark Locke. I'm the creative producer of National Geographic's Beyond King Tut, the immersive experience. My responsibilities are really the creative side of what we do here.
Describe what people see when they come to this immersive exhibit.
That word immersive, I've used it for the last 25 years to mean something different than it means now to most folks. Immersive exhibitions mean these large projection exhibits, Van Gogh and Monet, and I think they're wonderful. In fact, that was the inspiration for doing this. But I also realized pretty quickly that this is more of a story than just images, not to demean them, but artistic images surrounding you and swirling around you. So I think what we've done here, and I hope we've been successful, is we've combined both a progressive storyline, a beginning, middle, and an end, 9 different galleries with a crescendo of, quote, an immersive room where the large screens tower above you, but really focusing on telling a story. And it's all about this 100th anniversary of the discovery of King Tut. November 4th is exactly the day that Howard Carter and his Egyptian team made this incredible discovery. Some say the most significant archaeological discovery of all time.
And imagine what it was like for them to break through the seal that kept this tomb secret for 3,000 years and see piled up artifacts in the anteroom.
Can't imagine. You know, it was recorded that someone said, "Can you see anything?" And Howard Carter, with his torch extended inside, it had to be, the glow had to be mysterious and wonderful. So when it was asked, "Can you see anything?" his response was, "Yes, wonderful things." Well, he knew he had discovered, along with other folks working on that team, the only intact tomb, meaning the things were still inside, to this day. And remember, King Tut probably would have gotten lost in the pages of history. He wasn't a significant king, a very short reign, not much to his credit per se, but because of this incredible discovery, he's become the most famous of all the Egyptian kings.
Ramses II, eat your heart out.
Well, that's what it is, right? Exactly. And, you know, the Egyptians believed, too, if your name was spoken throughout history, you would have eternal life. And I always think that the boy king's doing quite well in the afterlife.
Why are we seeing reproductions and photographs and not the actual artifacts?
I had the honor, really, of touring the actual artifacts here in L.A., actually, at LACMA, and then the exhibit moved on to the California Science Center years later. Because of COVID and because of the timing of this brand-new Grand Egyptian Museum being built in Egypt outside of Cairo near the pyramids, the artifacts, the contents of the tomb, will for the first time be in one spot. That means they won't travel for many years to come, maybe not in my lifetime. So, you know, there's nothing like seeing a piece of history, you know, you're 6 inches away from the glass and looking at that wonderful piece of history. But we thought, well, how do you tell this story in a different way without the objects? And really with not only the help, but the real depending on National Geographic to be the force. Not only their photographic archives, their video archives, their film archives, but the years they've worked in Egypt almost coincides with the discovery. So most importantly, from my standpoint, also their academic oversight of this exhibit. You know, you could put together something that, you know, you went to Wikipedia and you grabbed some Getty images and said, I have an exhibit. Well, to work with National Geographic not only is an honor, but really is the only way I think we could have done this and given its proper due.
I think the most iconic image of King Tut is that golden mask that was in the sarcophagus that was covering the mummy. But there were a lot of other personal items as well. His gloves, for example, you see them reproduced here in your exhibit. What really touched you?
I think that little game called Senet that all Egyptians played, whether they were adults or children, knowing that it was put into his tomb, and it's no bigger, it would have fit in the palm of your hand, a little drawer inside and these little playing pieces on top, that spoke to me as a more personal item and really made me think of him as a child, you know, a child playing a simple game, whether he was down on the banks of the Nile, just lost in his own imagination. We forget that, I think, because he was a king, right? But when he was king and before he was king, he was still a child. And when I look at that little game as a photo now, but also we've reproduced it in large size so that parents and children can play the same game here in the exhibition.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to the KPCC listeners about this King Tut exhibit here in downtown LA at Magic Box.
Such a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for coming.
Now let's get some food. Glendale is home to one of the largest Armenian populations in the world, which means you can find cuisine you just can't find elsewhere in LA County, like Georgian dumplings or hamburgers made with sujuk. LAist's Gab Chabran and How to LA host Brian De Los Santos dig into those dishes and more.
He's back.
I'm going to go ahead and order the kimchi breakfast burrito.
I think you know who I'm talking about.
Spicy, bright, acidic. Earthy, umami flavors.
In Armenia, he used to have a restaurant too. He's trying to like live the same life.
I love the sopa, the soup. What is it? Broth? Yeah, the broth. Yeah. The broth.
Think of it like the size of a baby's fist.
Alrighty, y'all. We're back at it with our food editor, Gav Chabran. He's taking us on another tour of cheap fast eats across LA.
Let's try the cheese next. I'm gonna cut this fried one up.
Do you wanna try all of the cheese, beef, or mac and cheese?
Glendale is culturally, historically, it's a fascinating place. Some refer to it as the gateway to the San Fernando Valley. It is the first 818 area code.
It's an Armenian sausage, right?
It's a cured Armenian sausage, like a jamon serrano or something like that.
Can I get a menu or something?
Menu, we have a menu. We have only one item. It's a flatbread with rice.
There's this mix of cultures that's going on, and they all kind of form one hell of a delicious bite. I'm Gab Chabran.
And I'm Ryan De Los Santos. This is Cheap Fast Eats Glendale Edition. All right, Gab, what are we checking out first?
We're going to try an Oklahoma smash. We're in a strip mall off of Central Avenue in Windsor, down the street from the Americana. Here in Glendale, we're trying to do a fair representation of all the different cultures and generations that are present. Front Yard Burger is kind of like a street food type of approach to hamburgers. But what drew me to it initially was something called an Oklahoma smash. It's actually like OG cheap fast eats. The idea rose from the Great Depression, essentially using the cheapest ingredients on whatever you have on hand. That's a very American concept, but the owners here are Armenian. So they're approaching it from this like kind of new hype beastie street food execution as far as the burger goes.
I feel like every group, whether you're immigrant or you're from here, we have ways to make things cheaper and make things delicious, especially for mom and pop shops like this, right? This is not a chain restaurant. You're only going to find this in Glendale, California.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to do the Oklahoma smash and then one of the Bastourma Sojuk.
Oklahoma smash and Bastourma Sojuk?
Yeah.
Alright, it's gonna be
$14.86. So I'm gonna butcher this, but what is this Bastourma Sojuk?
Basically, it's gonna be beef seasoned with Armenian seasoning. The owners over here like they're Armenian, so they have to include it in the thing, you know?
Definitely.
Armenians like it, you know?
Yeah.
Would you like a receipt?
Yes, please.
My name is Joe. We're at Frontier Burgers right now.
So what was the price point for this meal?
A little over $14 for the both of them.
All right, we're on the budget.
Exactly.
This is the Oklahoma. Basically, it's like grilled onions based and with our house sauce and pickles. And the bastarma sauce just over there.
Which one is the one with Armenian sauce?
This one.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Brought my knife so we could share equally here.
You want to get the audio of the knife opening?
Sure.
Okay.
This tastes like a homemade burger. It's fresh. It has the seasoning is just right. The bread is soft.
With the smash patty, it literally means they're smashing these grilled onions into the patty, piled with pickles, and then I believe it's grilled with mustard as well.
That sausage, it's Armenian sausage, right?
Yes.
Hits the spot.
It's a cured Armenian sausage, so in a sense, it's aged. Think of kind of like a jamon serrano or something like that.
It tastes like when my mom would make burgers for me and my cousins, and we would like hang out outside and eat these burgers. But with the twist of the sausage, my mom didn't add sausage. So to me, it's like, oh, if I want to taste something like home with some different like flavor, I will come here and, you know, maybe bring those cousins again and we can share this burger.
Did you have the burgers in the front yard?
Oh, got it.
Did
it was the backyard. Okay. It was still a yard, though.
Okay.
All right. So what's next, Gob?
We're headed to Klinkali House.
This is fancy.
Well, nothing but the best for you, Brandon Los Santos.
You know, it's my Beyonce status. You know, everywhere I go in LA, do they know we're coming?
No, not yet. So we'll have to let them know what we're up to today.
Scheming for food places.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to keep it real with you. I'm not the 100% dumplings fan. Like, it's just, I haven't had a great one here in LA.
Brian, there's a dumpling for everybody out there.
They're not so small, like Asian dumplings. They're pretty big.
This is Emin. He's our server at the Georgian Dumpling House today.
Can you remind me again the pronunciation?
Klinkali.
Klinkali. We would like to get an order of each, if that's okay.
Okay. One beef, one cheese, one mushroom all boiled.
Unless you guys want to try some of the fried too, what do you think?
What's better?
So for the boiled one, I recommend you to try the beef.
Right.
That's the traditional way.
Right.
But our customers like to eat the cheese one fried.
Okay, let's do the cheese one fried then.
Wait, God, we're only getting three dumplings for all of us? How big are they?
Think of it like the size of a baby's fist. With these boiled soup dumplings, they come with a little bit of broth inside. And then the thick part of the dough actually serves as a cute little handle for each dumpling. So you can bring it up to your mouth, bite off a little corner, and slurp out the juice.
So we have here the cheese fried. This is the beef boiled. And these two are the mushroom. I recommend you make a hole on the dumpling and drink the broth. After it, put some sour cream on it.
I love the sopa, the soup. What is it? Broth?
Yeah,
the broth.
Yeah.
The broth. The sour cream elevated the whole dumpling. Mm. Now I know why they bring it out.
Are you still a dumpling hater?
And a correction, I've never been a hater. I just haven't had really great ones in LA. I think this compares to a really good one I've had in San Francisco.
So in other words?
In other words, I do like dumplings. I'm not a hater.
Okay, this is a little random, but we have to talk about it. Why is Glendale the gateway to the valley? I used to be an 818 girly, and I never felt like Glendale was a part of the 818. Although it shares the area code, I get it. It's just, it's very different.
In my thinking is that it's the beginning to the valley. It's sort of the introductory paragraph in that respect. The valley is vast and diverse and, you know, full of its own sort of idiosyncrasies. And Glendale's the perfect example of that.
This is it. We're here.
Jengerlov Hats. It's kind of a cafe that women come to have tea at, I guess is the best way that I can explain it.
Can I get a menu or something? Menu, we have a menu. We have only one item. It's a flatbread with beans.
There's sort of a traditional meets modern. Despite the fact that this place is only about 3 years old, the food and drinks that it serves are actually very steeped in Armenian tradition.
Որը պատրաստվել է Արցախում ու եկել հասել է Հայաստան, որից հետո եկել հասել է Միացյալ Նահանգներ.
Old style food that initially was made in Artsakh, then it moved to Armenia, then it moved to United States.
That's how to LA engineer Hazmik Bogosian.
translating for Yvette behind the counter here today.
And
now we are kneading the dough. We put 12 different kinds of herbs inside.
It's green chard, red and white, spinach, it's a sorrel, scallions, dill, cilantro, and the rest is a secret.
This is a flatbread unlike any that we've had thus far on Cheap Fast Eats. There's something confident about a place that only sells one thing. It's like you're putting all your eggs in one basket.
Alrighty, y'all, that's all the time we have for you. Even Gob can't keep the food adventure going all night long. Special thanks to Front Yard Burgers, King Kali House, and what's the last one, Gob?
Jengolov Hats.
That's it. And special thanks to, of course, our food editor, Gob Shabran.
Anytime, Brian. For more Cheap Fast Eats in Glendale, check out my article on LAist.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. We'll be back tomorrow with more of what's happening around LA. Until then, enjoy your weekend and try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.